Dream house or prison cell? I wake up each day in it, whatever it is. I welcome people to it without knowing what it is. Imagine that. Maybe I'm inviting you to jail. I'll make it sound like the country estate of a local family who caters to visitors, though. I open and close doors and move things around and let light in and shut light out. So I either own the dismal place or work here. I check on the family members we have locked in wells. I air out blankets. I sweep floors. I meet you late for breakfast. The good news is there are secret tunnels that lead from my castle to the restaurant. Even though I can't see them, I can hear them. I can hear you in the distance, complaining. You're late. Not that late. Do you know what you want? I don't know what I want. Do you know what you want? Yes. I'm one of those people who knows what they want. I never know what I want. It changes. Especially if I ask for it. Then I don't want it anymore. You sound too contented. I am. Is there such a thing? Yes. You can get so contented, you turn into a cow. I don't think that's true. It's not literally true. I'm uncomfortable with the idea of ordering. You mean numbering things? No, I mean demanding someone to get you something.
But you don't even know what you want.
Exactly. How can I order someone to get it?
Think of a desire you have, like thirst, then yell out a solution, like water, then direct that at someone you think could make that solution happen.
I don't mean to eavesdrop, but you're certainly welcome to my water.
Thank you, sir. Might take you up on that.
Can you see me?
No, of course not. Can you see me?
No.
So what's the problem?
That doesn't bother you.
Why would it bother me?
Well, how do you know who you're talking to?
Is this Hardy White, who lives in a room that may or may not be a castle or a prison, and who was late to breakfast with me this morning?
Yes.
Well, my imagination fills in the rest.
We're in a restaurant.
Sure, why not?
Don't just agree because you think it's what I want to hear.
Look, let's get out of here. I think a long walk would do you good.
I like walking. I like feeling as if I'm headed somewhere. Walking seems productive. Even if you're actually just wandering and you're the laziest person in the world, the walking implies some sort of productivity, that you're getting it done, that you're headed somewhere. You can still put one foot in front of the other. You're walking. It's like when people say, use your mind, think. I'm just thinking the wrong things.
Do you think you could ever do any of that silently?
You mean walk without thinking?
Or talking?
I'm not talking. I'm thinking. I didn't invite you in here.
All right. I don't mind the talking, I guess. It lets you know you're still breathing.
You can think without breathing. For a while, at least.
And think of all the things you can do without thinking.
I can't.
Me too. Do you think this guy is ever going to rent out this space? Every time we pass by it, I think what a good space it would be.
What would you do with that space if you could rent it?
I'd keep it as a space.
Really?
Yeah. It's just a good space. It'd be a shame to fill it up with just one possibility.
Well, could you temporarily do things in the space?
Like a party?
Yeah, set up tables and chairs and a band.
If you're quick about it. I'd say for a few seconds here and there.
Seconds? That's not enough time.
It's never enough time, no matter how much you get. If you can't do it in seconds, it's probably going to take longer, and that's a drag.
Are we responsible for where we end up? I feel sometimes I'm just am thrust into situations or rooms.
But you get to write your own lines, by and large.
That's true. By and large.
By and large.
by and large.
Now it feels meaningless.
I know. Repetition makes things meaningless, they say.
Does it?
Yes. They say.
Do they say?
They say it does.
Why would we want to rob something of its meaning?
Well, I mean, if that's all it has, if it doesn't have anything else valuable.
My cousin once broke into the wrong house, didn't take anything, and still got charged for burglary.
But he broke into a house.
Yeah, but the wrong house. He never meant to break into that one. Total accident. Wrong place at the wrong time.
Where are we now?
Why is that so important? Why do you always want to make place a character in your life?
Because I'm infinitely amusing.
Hey, it's spaceship interior.
That's me, boys. The interior of this lovely interstellar vessel.
So, are you also the exterior?
No, alas, merely the interior.
Don't say merely. You're the only part we see.
You see me?
He meant here.
Yes.
We never get to talk to the exterior of the spaceship for obvious reasons.
It's often a brief conversation, I'm told.
Do you ever talk to your exterior?
No. Interior dialogue only.
Sometimes I think you're not the interior of the ship, but just another passenger.
Why can't I be both?
It's funny. I just saw the word both in my head, and it transformed into broth. I must be hungry, and now I want broth. Do you get broth on these flights?
When I was young, you would get not only a three-course meal, but there was also dancing afterwards and a buffet. And the buffet was vertical to save space.
Train travel in the early days before trains involved all this shuffling of big boxes. You'd sleep in them during the day.
Shh.
What? Do you hear something?
I thought I saw something.
Can't be. There's nothing to see.
I thought I did. I thought in this part of my brain that usually doesn't have any input, something came together. I say it's seeing, but I don't know. It's just there was something that wasn't there, and then it was there. Something filled in a space.
Your mind changes sets sometimes. You can hear furniture being dragged in and out if you listen carefully.
They say your most powerful memories are smell memories. That may be, but I can never summon them. They're always triggered, but never invited. I can't smell my great-grandmother's house if I try. But if I smell something of that house, I'm taken there against my will. I say against my will, but I don't mind going. It's just not my will.
Some food smells good.
Yes.
I'm just putting that out there. Didn't want to make any claims about memory for which I have no evidence up with which I can put. Churchill.
All right.
You seem restless.
I could use another walk. These rooms have too much in them. Too much to think about.
You realize we just changed the background noises. You never really move anywhere. But you should get up and move around and go outside anyway.
I think it would be good for me, you know? Sometimes I feel like I'm in some sort of cage, you know? And nobody sees me. It's a cage that nobody ever comes by. It's just me tapping on the glass, looking out. But if I go outside, I'm in it. I'm taking in possibilities. I'm looking at things. I'm collecting. So I'll notice that, look, they're putting a new roof on that house over there. And I'll remember that. And I got no reason for it, though. The day I saw a new roof, doesn't it's meaningless. And now I feel like maybe it's taking up room as something else. Do I need to get rid of this before I get a new thought? Neighbor's house has new roof. Stop thinking it. So I can get a new thought. Like, that rose looks like a dancing demon girl. And that flower of there, that daylily, that looks like some sort of, maybe some like dancing demonic thing or an imp or something. And that over there, that tree, looks like some sort of majestic monster. I don't know if the monster is for me or against me. And now I see it doesn't notice me. and I feel both rejected and lucky. Maybe nothing notices me. Should I feel insulted? Does a ghost or a very tiny rodent walking among the dinosaurs feel insulted or lucky? Oh, maybe I'm in a place where nobody notices me. Maybe I'm moving so quickly and everything else is moving so slowly that I seem like a gnat flying by, that I seem like a buzz in someone's ear. Some light in the corner of your eye. Maybe that's me walking around. Or maybe I'm moving so slowly that whole lives, whole eras are going by my ears. Maybe I'm talking over the concert. I think about that sometimes. I think about sometimes that maybe I'm the guy speaking in the theater and that we can't hear the real message because I'm yakking and won't shut up. And why am I doing it? Because I'm lonely. I gotta download my whole life to you while we sit here. And we could be listening to poetry. And instead, I'm going on and on about my washing machine and my new internet connection, which is a company that my cousin owns, but turns out is not a company at all. And the thing that I thought was a router is really a walkie-talkie from the 70s. I don't know. Because I'm not paying attention, that's probably it. And this dang not seeing. I know there's things to see, but in this place right here, there doesn't seem to be anything to see. It's just a place of words. So I could fool you. But at the same time, I can't hide anything from you. It's very difficult to hide things in a place where you can't see at all. Because even the person doing the hiding can't tell if it's a good place. I could be hiding it right in your head. Oh, I gotta think of a better place than that. Sometimes you're laying out something for children to find, like eggs, Easter eggs, or the Afikoman, or maybe just money. You say, hey, I've come into some money, nephew, and I'm going to hide it somewhere, and then should I die, there's going to be a series of clues. Where are the clues going to be? Well, one of them will be in my headstone, because I've relayed a cryptic message to the man who carves the headstones, and he's going to make some sort of reference to the remark novel, The Black Obelisk. And so you've got to read the novel in German. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to do that. It's very convoluted, but do you want the money or not? Sometimes if we want the treasure, we must spend our entire life trying to interpret the treasure map. Is it even a treasure map? There are so many people now with very elaborate back tattoos that look like an entire mural or something. Look at that. So many of them are pirate treasure maps that I can't even tell you. That's why people don't go to the beach who have those. Say, like heck, I'm going to take off my shirt and reveal my pirate treasure map. But we do reveal the maps of our soul all the time, do we not? When we take off our metaphorical shirt on the symbolic analogy of the beach of our soul that points to something else. Not everything is symbolism. Oh, no. Some of it are things that stand for other things, like signs. Some things are merely signs and not symbols. Give me an example of a sign. Two examples of a sign that I can think of. One is the funny one that says slow children, right? And you go, what is it now? Are the children slow? Also, it's misspelled. Another sign might be like a star exploding and then spelling the words, doom, you are doomed, mankind, or one of those things. There's a whole series of phrases it could be. Astronomers have these books. Say, all right, if there's something spelled out in stars in the sky, here's some phrases that we think would be negative, like you're all doomed, or beware, or get out of there, or something like that. And then there's ones that are neutral, that are named names of space products from a part of the universe that doesn't concern us. You see what I'm saying? So if you say, suddenly spelled out in stars, it says, you know, Wombus or something like that. That's, Wombus is a product that we don't have over here. We don't even need it. It's a skincare product for silicone-based people. There you go. And so just ignore that. That would be fine. What about the positive ones? Like, everybody's going to get rich or something like those. That, don't pay attention to those. Those are all adverts for something on this earth. Everyone wants you to buy something, don't they? No, no they don't, Hardy. Have you never been to a flea market where people don't have things for sale for once? They're just saying, hey, come take these things off my table. That may not be true. They do want it exchanged for something. In this case, money. But it's not always like that. That doesn't make people mercenary. What makes people mercenary? I guess some kind of battle fatigues, a stash of weapons, a willingness to take money to commit violence, and a name, a little name tag or badge or something neat like that, or a hat. Oh, it'd be fun to be part of something, an army. When we're children, a lot of us are fascinated by the uniforms worn by armies of cruel or barbaric people or authoritarian horribleness. We'll say, well, look at that, though. I would love to have epaulets like that or whatever they're called or something on my sleeve. I would love to look sharp like that, be part of something. What a beautiful helmet. Look, what has it got, horsehair on it or something? Or it is a horse's head, but it's cast in metal. Look at that. I would love to look like a knight of shining old someday. And I will to someone. When I was a young man, there was a poem. And I've discussed it. I may have even read it in public to people because I wanted to share it with. And that is A Skeleton in Armor by Longfellow. What was Longfellow's first name, Hardy? That's something I'll leave to the ages, the mystery of the ages. We don't know. A lot of things get forgotten like that. I'm sure it could be, it's probably at my fingertips, but I don't care to look at it. I mean, you're yelling it at home. Maurice, it isn't Maurice, I know that. But A Skeleton in Armor tells the story in poem form of something that was read in a police blotter in one of the local newspapers. Man digs up skeleton in armor. Comes up with elaborate reason that it's a murder victim shoved in some armor like that instead of what it probably is, which is a dead knight. They find kings buried in parking lots now. Why not find a knight buried under an American chestnut tree under which the village smithy is standing? And he's thinking, the American chestnut is extinct. Therefore, I must be living in the past. He's a bit of a time traveler. But because he's a smithy, John Smithy, you get it? He's the doctor. Doctor Who is an American 18th century smithy, blacksmith. Don't you see it? And he made his time machine not just out of metal, not just using an anvil and a hammer, not just using heat, but using fire, the heat of the fire. But not just. But that was a big thing because he found out that he got his bellows was so efficient that it made the fire nuclear. And he was able to fission a fusion together. Very few people can do that. And what he made was something that was like almost like Alice in Wonderland. What he did is he created some sort of mathematical, poetic, nonsensical, surrealist type of tale using high tech, using fire. And with that, he said, I've opened up a passageway. Now, a metaphor would be, for instance, when I was in my basement and I was digging through the wall and the wall came down and the other side of the wall was a vault in a bank. And the bank was from many, many years ago. It had been forgotten. Next door now, it's just my next door neighbor. But there it was, a bank vault from like the 19th century. It had gold lettering on it and everything. And there in the bank vault were bags of gold. And I quickly ran over to them and I said,
I'm rich with bags of gold, but then I saw that the bags of gold were being clutched by the skeletons of the dead. Laying there, somebody perished in that vault, holding that money. And there they were. And the first thing I thought is, I must turn this into some sort of amusement ride. I'll make the skeletons out of, not out of bone, but out of foam or something. So I want people scared. I want to give people the feeling that they're seeing a scene that they've arrived on that has rotten human remains. But I want them in the safety of it being made out of something else. And then I will take these bones and I will turn them into flour. I will grind them up in the traditional English storytelling manner and make flour from my bone bread, which I then serve to giants. And it makes them cranky. And then I control them. Giants aren't bad people. Jack the Beanstalk Man is bad people. First he gets tricked. These magic beans, another charlatan who tells him, you too can use a shortcut to get rich, and that is thievery. That's the whole, Jack and the Beanstalk, the story is thievery. A thief, a charlatan, sells these beans, this tricks a kid, basically saying, there's no right or wrong, there's only getting ahead. And they treats the kid does this, says, I'm going to go up and steal from the giant. Giant is a rich man, it's royalty. So, oh, peasants just take what they need. Isn't that awful? You didn't know that, right? So, well, I kind of believe that, though. Oh, I don't know what your politics are, but I'm still catching up because I've spent so much time in the 1790s in a part of England where there's not a lot of people. All right? So to say that I'm sheltered is an understatement. I'm sheltered in time and space. A lot of people are merely sheltered, say, oh, you, as a youth, you weren't exposed to a lot of ideas. I was not exposed to the space-time continuum at all. I was preserved in it, like a little mummy. Isn't that something? My spirit. A lot of people now examine, so I'm interested in science and also made-up things. So I want to know where, if my... So can I, my soul be dated, like carbon dating number 12, strawberry carbon dating number 22? Can you do that? Or will I never know who I really am? I know. You may just think you're you, but you're probably somebody important from another space and time. Maybe you're somebody important from the future. That stinks, because then you got to go through it. Now you got to go to school and be that person. That's going to be tough if you're a famous person from the future. Say, so, oh, yep, it's all ahead of you. You can't rest on your laurels. Say, but I was Laurel. But you weren't Laurel and Hardy Laurel. You were a young lady named Laurel. And you should have tried harder. Because you once said, I wanted a dancing career, but I gave up. What'd you do with it? Oh, I frittered my life away. Cooking? No, why would you think that? Because you said fritter. And I just assumed, oh, friends, I make a lot of assumptions just to get through the day. Do you know that on previous shows, you've said the word navigate a total of 18 times in the same show? Why is that? Are you trying to give a hint? Are you trying? Is that a code word? You're trying to shout out to all the ships at sea? What kind of word would navigate be as a code word to ships? Because that's a very ordinary word for us. We need to hear a word like penguin or something we know is a code word. You just say navigate, we gloss over. Cap'n, too, is how we say captain. We don't bother, because at sea, your life expectancy is shorter. So why take time to say the entire word? Bossen, fissen, that's what they cut the word boatswain off to bosun or something like that. And I read a lot, they make you in school read a lot of nautical stuff. I really thought that England, there was no actual England, that it all took place on boats, that it was really something that happened at sea, that the entire 19th century was really just on water, and the previous century to that, century of boats. That wouldn't be so bad, would it? Because what a great metaphor for life is the boat, and so many poets have used it, and maybe they've used it too much. Can something be overused? Yes. What would that... Name some things that can be overused.
Brake pads.
Brake pads are good. What else can be overused?
Cliché.
No, but cliché is... Well, it wouldn't be a cliché if it wasn't overused.
Like a worn brake pad.
But you don't need worn brake pads.
Do we need clichés?
I think we do.
Why?
Well, because I think clichés are like maybe like a comfortable shoe or something. I think they're metaphors that were so... You're all asleep, I've noticed.
Because you're no longer conveying any information.
But I'm saying the same words. Isn't that interesting? You can take... If I take the Mona Lisa...
Don't take the Mona Lisa.
I'm thinking of taking it.
Just take it as an example. Don't literally take it. It's been done. That's old.
So just stealing the Mona Lisa would also be unoriginal.
Yes.
I see. All right. Take my wife?
Take your wife's Mona Lisa.
All right. So take, for example, a famous painting. Cut that up. Rearrange the pieces. Is it still a famous painting? I hear you thinking, oh my goodness, I'm writing it down harder because I don't know. Is it a number puzzle? Some things are. If you have the play at home game, you realize a lot of what I say are simply clues to the board game. Oh, it's more than a board game though. This one has, the problem with my board game is that certain pieces are organic. And so you can't keep them in the box. You have to keep them in the freezer. That's all right. That's not bad, because a lot of the little animal pieces, there are actually little animals. Some of them are insects. The insects ones can be kept in the box, I think, because they're preserved. Oh, my goodness, you can make your own pieces from a game, but you have to have a kill jar. That's where you put fingernail polish remover in there, then you put a live bug in there and watch it die. Oh, I couldn't do that. It breaks my heart. No, let's go out for a sandwich. Oh, are you also a vegetarian? Yes, like Hitler. I don't know, friends. I'm so inconsistent with everything I do. And it doesn't mean that I don't have good intentions.
Yes, it does.
How do I distinguish it? How do I tell? You know, I always think bad people always say, I'm a good person, don't they? How would you know, then, who's a good person, who's not? Everybody that utters anything about themselves, it smells like a paradox, doesn't it? Everything I say is a lie. One of those things. I'm a good person. I know. Everything like that, to my ear, sounds like a paradox. Probably because I'm in my end game. I think this is near the end of the game. I'm not going to die soon. But I can look out on the board and say, there are significantly fewer pieces. I remember I had more pawns. And I know I lost my rook early on.
Was I the rook?
No, man, you weren't the rook.
I wouldn't mind stepping aside for the team.
It's not really a team. I'm just a single player. You're really stepping aside for the king.
King seems really weak in chess.
It is really weak. So, that's why we're protecting him.
He doesn't seem all that, though. Let's protect somebody cool. Like a rook.
Well, you know.
The rook's really two people. A horse. And a people.
That's true. So maybe... Let's come up with a game where the rook is what we're protecting. And the king is like a pawn who also equivocates. King is like Hamlet. Oh, I'll move one square forward. Oh, no, I better move one square back. Even a pawn forges ahead, does it not? But the queen, I call him the queen because I don't want to be gender specific. He's a king, queen, whatever he wants to be is what he is. Bless his heart. He knows he's autonomous. Oh, how do you want the world to see you, chess piece? Like a pawn. I know that's what I am. That's how I identify, is tiny little thing with a round head, right? A bare round head. I'm a little bald man on this chess set. I don't mind that at all. You know why? Because I'm the rook's pawn. And that to me is meaningful.
I'd rather be the bishop. Bishop's got connections.
Yeah, it's true. The bishop does have connections.
And yet, he's just like, he looks like Ubu with a slit out of his face.
This is true. I wonder how he deals with that. I like realistic chess sets, some of them. I like ones that have different characters on them. Any story can be a chess set. You just take the characters. Any movie. Some movies there's not enough people in, so you have to duplicate. And my dinner with Andre would be difficult. I guess some of the pawns could just be other people in the restaurant or whatever. But the more intimate the movie. What movie has the fewest people in it? There's that one with just Nixon sitting alone. That's a good one, though. How about a chess set? Both sides are Nixon. And they're all gray. Every piece is gray, both sides. And all the squares are gray. And it's on, and it's Nixon. Nixon pawns and everything. And the game is called Nixon. And you just sit there. And looking at one another over this gray board with gray pieces on it. And you look at the other fella or your competitor and you say, your move. And they say, I'm pretty sure you go first. And you laugh and you walk away and you let someone else play it. You know what? You did the right thing because those pieces are impossibly heavy. Each one of them weighs as much as a star. Can you imagine that? All the matter condensed to right. You couldn't even move it. I'm not saying it's not movable. I'm saying you can't move it. It's too heavy. You wouldn't expect an ant to walk up to a rubber tree, all right, and move it without help, without getting his friends, or without calling up to Horton Hears a Who and saying, Horton, being impressed down here, I need you to do some stuff for me. Like that. I don't know if it's true. It's like hell money. That's a scam. So, I've been burning a lot of money for my dead ancestors because I hear they're broke in hell and everything. Hardly. They're doing that to everybody, going up, hitting them up for hell money. They are flush. You don't understand the things, how many swimming pools you've built in hell by burning that kind of money. Oh, my friends, I feel like I'm not giving you anything good. If I was to give you something, I could be prosecuted for forgery. So I want to give you something that helps you here. Try to buy food with this. And you go to spend it. You say, Hardy gave it to me. People look at you, then they look at it, and then they call the police. They go, this isn't legal tender. You can't use it. But he gave it to me. He said, it's what I needed. That's why I can't do that to your friend. That's why I tell you, oh, I want you to come over here and just look at my flea market table and you take what you need from me. I'm going to turn around so I don't see what you get. And I won't know. That way, I won't go on and on and on about how I really wish I could give you the manual. I really wish I could give you the warranty. I think it still has warranty time, but I don't know where I put the piece of paper. And you're going to really enjoy this. And I would have kept it, but I got an allergy. And I can't keep something like that in the house because I know eventually I'm going to rub it on my face because that's what I do. I take things that I love. I'm like a cat. And eventually I'm going to rub my face up against them and ruin them. Have you ever seen a child's toy that's been loved to death? A child can take a little toy, a stuffed monkey, a stuffed rabbit, some kind of ant or something, and rub it on his little face or her little face until the spit, which acts as a sort of acid rain, eats away at that lovey's face, and he's loved it to death. He's taken it and he's digested it with his own digestive juices. He drooled on that thing, on that teddy bear, and it just dissolves, and it dissolves in a pool of mush until it's gone. And say, what has my love done? So you tried to hold it too close to you. And you held it so close that you accidentally sort of ate it without actually putting it in your mouth. You've eaten it because the first stage of digestion is your mouth. Your saliva and your chewing is the first part of the stages of digestion. Hi, I'm Hardy Watt. As we all know, the old adage is you are what you eat. And this couldn't be more true. When you put something into your body, like some kind of bean dip or something, and it's got bacteria on it, or it's got large amounts of lead, how can it have lead in it? Well, a lot of times people keep their beans in their tackle box end up eating the weights that come with your fishing gear. I don't know if you know it or not. Some of them are made of lead. Not so much anymore. Now they're made of mercury, the way they should be. This gets into the food, and it accumulates in your liver, kidneys, or giblets, or whatever other thing. Chicken bits, bits of chicken dark meat, which are also in the gut. Upon death, these are taken out and fed to dogs. How can a dog love you and also eat your guts?
Did you say hate your guts?
I said eat your guts. It's different. Could you eat the guts of someone you hated?
I think sometimes you got to love somebody.
I don't know about cannibalism. I haven't really examined it. I know, though, in some cultures, it was a way of taking that person into themselves. They'd eat them.
Yep. You're making me ill.
Oh, I know.
This is why I don't eat meat.
You don't? Wow, you're such a big guy. How do you get enough calories?
I eat food. I just don't eat meat.
All right, that's all right. That's your choice.
Yep. Now I do. Now I don't.
Oh, so that's interesting. So sometimes you do eat it, you just don't actually eat it.
That's right. So I'm technically not a vegetarian because, like, right now I eat meat.
But you're not eating any.
Yep, I don't follow through. But that doesn't mean I don't.
Well, you don't physically do it, though you just think it.
Yep.
So you are whatever you think you are. Oh, my goodness. That's not good. Sometimes I think I'm better than I am. I need to face up. Should I let my enemies define me? They seem to be very accurate critics. They can see things in myself I cannot see. Perhaps we should. Or should we be confident in our flaws? Should we march around thinking we can do no wrong? It's hard to say. Who do we give the power of criticism to? Who can be trusted? It seems like people are going to abuse it. You say, you tell me honestly what you think. And you don't know if that's going to be used. And a lot of people want to just hear good stuff or just bad stuff. And I thought to myself, well, that seems hypocritical. So maybe I just want to hear nothing. Maybe I just want to yell into the darkness. I hear no room noise now. There's no sound effects. Where's the walking? Where's the castle?
Castle's always there. We're in a castle.
All right.
With blankets on our heads.
All right.
And we're under the same blanket.
That sounds fun.
We're having a sleepover. You and I are both royalty.
We are.
Yep. And we feel very isolated from our families because they're very royal and we're more down to earth.
All right. That's cool. So I've come over to your castle.
Or I've come to yours.
And we're having a sleepover.
Yep. What do you want to do?
Let's play. Do they have board games?
They got chess. They got Nixon chess.
I don't want to play that. Is there anything else?
Well, no. We could tell stories.
Oh, I'd like that. We could tell stories about adventures, about being in castles, about royal. Well, no, that sounds kind of ordinary.
Yeah. Let's tell stories about being suburban.
Yeah, being suburban. What's that mean?
That means not being in a castle, I guess. I don't know. I'm so used to seeing ghosts and skeletons in armor.
I know, me too. I think it's done something to my imagination. Now I can't think anything exciting.
Our life is exciting.
I guess so.
We could go dig up bodies.
Yeah. I don't know.
We could raid the kitchen.
You want to raid somebody else's kitchen? I like doing that because we have the armory. And we can always get... You had that mace one time, and I had a pike. And we went over to the neighbor's house, and we basically, they were all quivering in terror, and we got that bacon.
Yeah, I don't eat bacon anymore.
All right.
Dang it.
I guess we could dance. We could make music.
Let's do that. I got a sack butt.
Yeah, but you
say something about my personality.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was not quick enough, right?
Yep, you gotta be quicker.
All right.
What do you got?
I got a... Can't think. I'm trying to think of... Like a... What is it? A lute?
Yeah.
I got a lute.
Yeah, well, we all got to do something.
That was quicker.
Yep.
So, but I don't want to loot. Like, I don't want to take anybody's things. I mean like a guitar. So if we got a guitar and a sack, I'm not exactly sure what a sack bud is,
but it sounds awful.
It does sound awful. So you play that, and I guess we can make up a legend. We could make up stories about legendary knights or something.
Let's not do knights again.
Okay, like, dragons. Have you ever seen an actual dragon?
Wow, they're a lot bigger than I thought they would be. Holy cow. I feel slightly inadequate. My sword feels like... It's like that dragon is an actual Anoli, and my sword is like a little cocktail sword.
What color is it?
It's clear hot pink.
That's cool.
It is cool. I look cool. Man. Oh, boy, that dragon is huge.
I think it's gonna eat us.
No, I think I can keep it at bay.
All right, you hold it at sword point, and I'll go get the bag of gold.
What bag of gold? We're just fighting for our lives here.
And the bag of gold.
We just want to survive.
And get a bonus. Listen, I'm going in for it.
Oh, yeah, now it's going away.
Got the bag of gold. Let's go.
Hold on. Wait. I just fended off.
Is it fended?
Fended?
Fought.
Fought? I just fought a dragon?
You fought a dragon? No way. Let's go celebrate. I just came into some gold.
Sometimes I must lie down under the stars. A sort of confession or regular doctor's appointment. And I reorient myself. I sharpen myself like a razor blade under a pyramid. The sky is my blanket and roof and bed and head and pillow and nightstand and chamber pot. The stars are distant fish, deep fish, who glow as a way of sucking you in, literally.
Free us from our big containers.
Hey, what are you stuck in there?
I'm in a hamper, and my wife is in a huge Mediterranean-style wine tub, like Diogenes. I'm not complaining. I like my place.
Can I get you anything?
Half of a good apartment is transportation. Is it easy to get where I want to go? Yes. Can I actually get there because I'm stuck in a hamper? No.
We're lucky it's warm this time of year. We couldn't sleep outside in the winter.
You can do it, but you die.
Well, that's not doing
it. 50 of one.
If I get on the wrong boat, I want to be with a friend. Otherwise, I can't bear it.
I'll go with you.
Thanks.
Where are we going?
Bahamas. We inherited a hotel. We're going to run it with a ragtag crew of eccentrics.
Really? Oh my God, that's my dream. I've always wanted to do this. I've lived my whole life to do this. Oh, I can't wait. This is amazing.
I'm kidding.
I hate you. I hate you. That is so cruel and stupid. Why would you pick my specific dream? I hate you. Why crush my heart? Because it's funny. God, I hate you. That would have been so good.
I thought you knew I was just kidding.
No, I didn't know you were kidding. How would I know that?
Well, we were using our imagination and it's being fun.
No, that's just lying. Get my... Dang it.
When you're interviewing someone for an imaginary job, you really, really hope that they know that this is pretend. Otherwise, it can be a moral problem. So, oh, I thought you knew that we were just making all this up. Oh, you thought it was real. I got your hopes up. You started counting all your money. So I could finally make my dreams come true. Oh, is it my fault, though, that you got your hopes up? I thought you knew that most things were pretend and made up. Oh, I'm so sorry. You're not really a doctor. I just said that. I made up my imaginary school. I thought you were coming here to feel better, but you knew it was pretend. That we're just making this stuff up. No, I thought my PhD was something worth something. Well, what did you plan on doing with it? Well, I planned on maybe using it to get a job in a field of my expertise. Well, what is your expertise? Well, we never got to that. Well, what was the discipline? What did you study in school? Well, I did not take the classes. I was told that I would not need to. Oh, I think you were misled. Oh, I was just told that I just had to show up and I would get this PhD. No, that's not how it works. You have to study something. You have to learn something. A lot of times you go to classes where you have to
Go to a lecture or two? Oh. Oh, no, really? Yes. What were you told? Well, I was told that it was like a timeshare thing. You just go and you listen to a sales pitch, and then you get some cookies, and you agree to sign up for it. You take on some debt, and then you get your PhD, and you promise, you super, super swear promise that you'll go on and learn about things. Well, that's one way to do it, but that's not one that's recognized in our society a lot of times. What field did you think you were getting it in? Again, we did not get to that yet. I assumed that I would be able to do everything from medicine and also up into including consulting work of some kind. I don't know. There's a lot of PhDs that, who's allowed to call themselves doctor? I think, well, you can do it whimsically. If you repair toasters or something, I'm the toaster doctor or something like that. I'm sure there was lots of TV doctors when such a thing was needed. TVs weren't always disposable. Did you know that? A lot of them were made to be kept. Someone will have this TV in the family for a long time. Let's take it to the repairman. You went to it just like a dentist. You got fluoride treatments in your TV just like a dentist. That's why a lot of people don't approve of them, because they say, well, fluoride, isn't that what they put into my TV? Why would I get it in my mouth? Same reason. Rod Serling. And if you don't know about that, then you don't know about the golden age of television broadcasting. And also you wouldn't know about Newton Minow, who is the inspiration for the SS Minnow. Yes, that's true. Rarely do I say something that's actually true, but that is true. Let's not forget our history here, broadcasters. Are you broadcasting? What are you broadcasting? Seed? That's the original definition of that. A seed broadcaster would come to your town with a radio, and the radio frequencies would impregnate your corn. And that's how we get, say, seed broadcasting. Your seed's going out before you, they always say, is the expression. Or your seed, there's nothing left here but your seed, but a trace of that is left. How do we know? Blacklight is one way. Oh, my goodness, my friends. I look out there, and I have my eyes closed, so all I see is I see in my mind. But sometimes I can see your faces, and they're coming to me just, they're vague faces, like a hallucination of a face. I think those are eyes, but I see faces in a pack of cigarettes on a dromedary. So who knows what's real and what's not? Well, I think we know what's real. I like to forget what's real around the time that I owe money. Say, you owe me money. Say, who knows what's real, is what I say. And that doesn't always get me out of the debt. Apparently, that's not the kind of law that we recognize. And the law is a little bit prejudiced on the side of people that want their money, I've noticed. That's cool. I'm fine with that. I'm not here to steal. I'm not a thief. It's just sometimes I might take something and forget to give you exactly how much money it's worth. Likewise, perhaps you have taken something from me and you haven't given me what it's worth. And what is that? What is it worth? Well, let's say this was a farm. You could pay me in seed, or you could pay me in recipe, lemon bar recipe. What's that? Lemon bar. I'd open one of those up. Oh, sucking on lemons become a trend now. People are going headed down to the lemon bar. And they try to make conversation, but their lips are puckered together like that because they're sucking on this lemon because they've been told it's the emperor's new clothes fashion. So they're all doing it. But little do they know that the lemon is making them unable to communicate with one another. That lemon stands for the new hymnals at church, which I disapprove of. They are what's keeping man apart. No, this is one of my genetic sermons I'm offering up. You can insert anything there. If you write me and you tell me the names of the factions at your house of worship or employment, I'll give you a sermon about how they either ought to come together, break it up, or whoever you want to win or anything. I'll write it for you. I'm writing those now. I was saying, shouldn't you write a sermon just for something you believe in? Certainly that's preferable. But on these hard times, sometimes I just need to write something convincing for you, no matter what's going on. Bless your heart.
I'm sure it's basically good. I'm going to tell myself what it is. No, I'm kidding. I'm just doing that. That's my impression of advertising. Oh, I tell you, you can speak to people's hearts. Once you have their heart's attention, it's like making a crank call. You can call somebody by accident, but you have two roads you can go down. You can go down, mess with them and hurt their feelings road, or end up keeping them company and saying something, end up saving their life because they have some kind of blood sugar problem, and you were on the line with them, harassing them, just as they were having an incident, and you were able to contact the authorities. Say, hey, I was just verbally harassing, and this person started to have, they started to sound a little vague and out of it. And now I think they're having maybe some hypoglycemia or something. Get to their house. That's good and noble, even though you were there for the wrong reason. Hardy, can I be in the wrong place for the right time, at the right time, for the wrong reason, with the right people, but for the wrong motivations, but it's the right time? Is the time right or wrong? The place is wrong. The time is right. The people are neither right or wrong. What's your opinion? I'm sorry. You really lost me. That's why I think we are best to give ourselves advice, because we can best tolerate our own boring story about our problem. Otherwise, other people, oh man, I wasn't listening, but I feel like I get to give them an answer. And they do, and they've done a disservice to you. You are capable of listening to that story about the minutiae of what's bothering you interminably. So you are the best bet for the one who could be the best judge of it, because you can listen and pay attention. The rest of us are like, oh, Lord, what time's I'm hungry. So that's why we always physician, judge, whatever you are, pet groomer, heal thyself or do it to yourself first. So can I do that myself? That's why I always ask myself, do I need help? I love help, and everyone should ask for help when they need it. You got to know when you need it. That's the thing. Do we know when we need it? Say, too many people err on the side of not asking when they need it, maybe, or the other way around, maybe. Who knows? So what should I advocate for? Well, my teacher says, don't advocate, shut up. I said, shouldn't I shut up? And I said, but isn't it man's obligation? Shut up. And then I don't know why I have this teacher. I would like a little better explanation. Sometimes I quote Ronald Reagan. I go, sir, I am paying for this microphone/lessons. Shouldn't I be the one? Shouldn't you at least answer me? To me? And they say, you can't be the boss and the student. Which are you? I said, I'm sorry. But sometimes I like to, when should I question authority? Hardy. Well, probably when, I don't know, when you're in jeopardy, so to speak, because they like things in form of a question. So whenever you're in jeopardy, question authority. Otherwise, answer it. Oh, that's it. Oh, I don't want to say anything. I'm afraid if I say anything like, oh, eat when you're hungry, it'll be seen as subversive. Like that, and they'll come and they'll take me away. No, they're not going to waste their time on you. Why? Well, because look at you. Okay, who's they anyway? Oh, you know, the authorities. That's when a lot of times our dark existential fiction is no good in this country, because we need scarier things to be afraid of, don't you think? I think we're taking it to that next level, though. We're about to go there. I think that'll be more fun. And you'll notice it'll be reflected in the architecture. See, man, I think there's like less windows now in buildings. And you go, yep, here it comes. Dun, 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 dun. Oh, when they start to make birds out of stone, that's how you know things have gone on a bad route, I think. Anything short of that, we're all right. Are there enough statues in public? Yes, and they're called Our Fellow Man. Thank you. I'm Hardy White. No, I'm not going to pontificate. I'm not going to moralize. I'm the last one to do that. So what are you saying to do? I don't know. I didn't know I had control. Do I have control now? Do I have the helm of mankind? Do I?
Stansham, do I have the helm, sir, good sir?
Yes, sir, take over the helm.
I shall have it before this day unto you, and I look over the bow, whatever this is, that I'm at the helm at. And I say, I'm going to steer it, because I've been given command. I don't know why. I must have been hit on the head. Perhaps I was an officer in the Navy or something. I don't know how I got here. But here I am now steering the ship. So what shall I command? Off to where do they have breadfruit? I think we'll need that or something. I'm having vague little memories come back to me in smidgets. So if anybody else has any suggestions, or I know y'all have lots of experience on the high seas, please feel free to offer your suggestion. I'm new at being at the helm. And granted, here I stand, but I don't know where to tell you, where to lead you to. So maybe if you have any suggestions, you yell it out. Or what we'll do is we'll do like the old trains. You pull a cord or something and the boat will just stop. It's a ship. It's a boat also. Let's not pretend. So anyway, well, enjoy, y'all. I know this isn't like a cruise. We all have to work and everything and swab and all that. I just found out what that is because I thought in my land and place, swabs are little things that you clean your ear. Here, you're not even thinking about cleaning your ears. You have so much else to do, my swabbies. All right, well, I'll let you get on with your work. There's a barrel full of apples as well, and there's another barrel, but I think there's a young boy in there eavesdropping. So you just leave him be. That's something they need to do at that age, is listen in to pirate tales. And so let him just, if you're around the barrel, go ahead, feel free to come up with some fanciful lies and everything to tell the youth, to motivate them, really. So they'll want to be pirates and mutineers and privateers as well. Oh, it's so good to be at sea with you. I'm sorry that we couldn't get appropriate sound effects for you. And like I said, when this happens, we say we're all just, we're at sea, but we're all individually under a blanket. And so you're not hearing anything. And also there's something in your, someone has put something in your ears, like breadfruit. All right, y'all have a wonderful time at sea. I'm so glad that I could be with you. I'm awful glad. I hope that I'm like one of those pills you take to keep you from retching as the tide takes you in and out and buffets you. Who wants to be buffeted? I don't know where I'm from. That Florida, that has a different meaning. So, man, what just happened? I got buffeted. We were down at Key West, What happened? Got buffeted. You got badly buffeted. Yes, I did. I was out on the water. That's where it usually happens, out on the water. Get buffeted, mercilessly buffeted on the water. I was. And person doing a parrot impression there for a while. I'm not going to do it. Oh, bless you. What are you listening to?
I'm listening. Bah.
That's the parrot.
Bah, Hardy White.
What's Hardy White listening to? He's listening to WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, WFMU.org, and 91.9 in Rockland County. Thank you so much for being with me, my friend, and I will be with you again, God willing, next week.
Understand. Yes, sir. What is up?
The sensational happy travelers right there, immediately playing beneath us on the Sinner's Crossroads Gospel broadcast this evening on WFMU. And the Brown Singers were the gospel folk we were listening to. I feel it in the title of their gospel composition there on the Songbird record label, about 1967. And right